The First Kiss by Sibelius. Soile Isikoski was joined by the Helsinki Philharmonic and Leif Segerstam. And that's all for this Sunday morning. I'll be back next weekend, and along with that promised Poulenc double piano concerto, I've Mozart's Symphony No. 39. Also on the menu, as it's Handel's birthday, I've one of his Shandos anthems and a trio of works by other German-born composers who settled in England. All that and more, same time, same place, 9 o'clock next Sunday. Meanwhile, I hope you've enjoyed my selection of music today and look forward to your company next week.
Sunday Morning with James Jolly is a unique production for BBC Radio 3 with studio production this morning by Lyndon Jones.
Live in Concert next Wednesday features a spectacular programme of Russian music with the London Philharmonic Orchestra and conductor Osmo Vanska. Khachaturian's piano concerto launched him onto the international stage, and it's brought to life by French-Canadian pianist Marc-André Hamelin. 40 years before this brilliant piece was written, fellow Russian composer Vasily Kalinnikov was staring failure in the face. Chucked out of music school and suffering from TB, his haunting first symphony gave him a brief taste of success when it premiered in 1897. Join me, Martin Handley, to hear both pieces live in concert next Wednesday at 7:30 here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, now it's time for Private Passions, and Michael Barclay's guest today is the singer-songwriter Joan Armatrading.
When Joan Armatrading's mother bought a piano as a piece of furniture, little did she know what she was starting. The 14-year-old Joan taught herself to play it, then to play the guitar, and 12 years later she burst onto the music scene with her hit song Love and Affection. In a career spanning 40 years, she's made 20 acclaimed studio albums, as well as undertaking an international touring schedule, which would make most people feel tired just thinking about it. She's received 3 Grammy and 2 Brit Award nominations. She's the winner of the Ivor Novello Award and the first female UK artist ever to debut at number 1 in the American Billboard Blues chart. And to cap it all, she has an MBE for services to music. Joan, I'm interested that you taught yourself to play the piano. Was it just you sort of loved having it there and found a way to get some sort of technique?
My mother bought it, thought it was a great piece of furniture, put it there, and literally as soon as it arrived, I started playing. You could dust a piano and make music. Whatever you do seems to sound nice, you know. So it's just a question of deciding, well, that dusting sounds nice. Do I want to keep that or do I want to dust a different section? You know. So, I just started to play it.
Did you at that point know much about classical music?
I knew classical music, but I didn't know it, if you know what I mean. When I was younger, I used to go to the cinema club. When I went to the cinema club, it was all about Westerns and Sinbad and Jason and the Argonauts and things like that. And all of those films had classical music in it, Rachmaninoff and Beethoven and all the things that we know and love. But I didn't know it was classical music. I just realised it was music that wasn't pop music.
And the language that you began to develop for your own music would not have been so much that which you heard in the cinema. So how did that evolve?
I don't really know, because I wasn't listening to lots of pop music. But my mother getting the piano, that's what started me and that's what got me into it. And it was natural. I always say I was born to write. So nobody said to me, OK, this is how you have to do it. I just did it.
That may be why, for me, your music kind of defies genre. You know, I think it's very much your own language. And the fact that, as you say, you were never told that, oh, this is pop music, this is jazz, this is classical, meant that you just took what you wanted.
Yes. And that's really what we should do, because music is there for us all to appreciate. And it's there to inspire us all. It's something that says, this is good, and you hear it and you think, oh, that's good. I wonder if I can do good as well.
You mentioned Beethoven just now, and I think it's Beethoven who provides the music for your first choice.
I think of Beethoven as jolly music. I'm not an extravagant person, but the music is extravagant, I think. And I love the piece that we're going to play, it's very kind of triumphant, and it heralds in something, and it's proud, and it's kind of showing off. But at the same time, it has this kind of playful thing going on, you know. It's tuneful.
It's from the Fifth Symphony, isn't it?
Yes. It's sentimental, but it's not slushy, you know, and I love stuff like that.
I think the triumph of Beethoven's music, especially, as you say, the jolly, the happy music, is that he had such a turbulent life in some ways that he transcended it by being able to write music which had such a lilt to it.
Yes. Just for myself, I've been thinking about this. And sometimes people say you have to have this kind of turbulence to be able to write great music. But, you know, I personally think that even if you have to have it, when you're actually writing it, you have to be in a very positive state. You have to be in a very good, positive place. So this turbulence, I don't know. I never met the guy. So I don't know if that's what the case. But I would say that with all the stuff he went through, there was lots of periods of time where he was really up and writing.
The final movement from Beethoven's Symphony No. 5, played there by the Berlin Philharmonic and conducted by Herbert von Karajan. Joan, you were born in the West Indies, on St. Kitts, in fact, and you were only 7 when you travelled alone to Birmingham to join your parents, who'd settled there 4 years earlier. Can you remember much of that period?
I don't really remember much about the West Indies. I was 7 and I feel as if I ought to remember much more than I do. I don't. Some of the things I can remember, like rain on the roof, the galvanised tin roof thing, I can remember that, the sound of that. I can remember walking along railway tracks with my brothers. And coming to England, I remember this first time I saw snow, which I thought was the most incredible thing, and my parents couldn't get me to come back inside because I just thought it was absolutely fantastic. As you say, I made the journey on my own from would have been from Antigua. My mother's from Antigua, and that's where I left to come to the UK. And remember getting to Birmingham Airport and having to take a bus. For some reason, my mother didn't meet me at the airport. I had to get the bus to the town centre, and that's where she met me. Just remember us kind of hugging and crying and just being really happy to be back together.
Was there music in your family? I mean, apart from the piano arriving as furniture, did any of your parents or the rest of the family play music, play an instrument?
My mother tells me that my father was in a band. I've never seen him or heard him in a band, but he was in a band in the West Indies. I don't remember him ever mentioning it. But he had a guitar, but he would always hide this guitar, so I could never I could never get hold of it. And I think it's this that made me want to play the guitar very, very much. And then I saw a guitar in a pawn shop, and that's when my mom said, I asked if I could have it. It cost £3. And I said, could I have it? She said, no, but I've got 2 old prams. If they'll swap the 2 prams for it, you can have it. So that's how I got my first guitar, which I still have, actually.
For the next piece, I think as much as anything, it is the performer that made you choose it as the music itself, much though you like that.
Yes, it's Nigel Kennedy. I think he's an absolutely exquisite player. It doesn't matter what he's playing, whether he's playing classical stuff, whether he's playing jazz standards, his own composition. It doesn't really matter what it is. He brings this excitement to it. You know, you talk about feel, and feel is something that you can't buy. You can't teach it. I don't think you can't teach it, and you can't buy it, and you can't say, well, show me how to feel. You either got it or you haven't, and he has it in spades. It's incredible how he plays.
Thank you. That was the first movement of the Vivaldi Concerto No. 1 in E major, La Primavera. And we heard Nigel Kennedy and the English Chamber Orchestra.
I was going to tell you a story. One day I went to Harrods, and this was quite a number of years ago, and I got thrown out. And they threw me out because I had holes in the knees of my jeans. And as they're throwing...
And now they're selling jeans with holes in them.
Yeah. And as they're throwing me out of the door, here follows this young chap who's been thrown out, and it's Nigel. And Nigel has been thrown out because he's got his violin with him. And so we stop and have a chat about why we're being thrown out of Harrods, and both of us thinking these preposterous. I mean, I don't know if you'd remember this, but it was just so funny that we both got thrown out of Harrods, one for carrying a violin and one for holes in the trousers.
Well, he could easily have had holes in his trousers too.
Yeah.
He is a wonderful example of, you know, it doesn't really matter what your tastes are, if you can pick up an instrument and do what he does with it. That's yeah. All that. You
know. Yeah, but not a lot of people that can do what he does with it, though, you see. This is the genius, I think, of him.
I think what you're talking about has a certain amount to do with improvisation, which a lot of classical musicians cannot do. I mean, they're absolutely brilliant sight readers, and they learn by rote. But if you ask them to play a 12-bar blues, they just wouldn't know where to begin.
No. He's got all the technical skills, but he's got this natural kind of free thing going on as well.
He does actually prefer to do without conductors whenever possible. But actually, your next piece, Joan Armatrading, is conductor-inspired.
Yes. This is a chap called Gustavo Dudamel. He's a young conductor from Venezuela, and he conducts all kinds of orchestras, huge orchestras, but one of the great things that he does is that he gets young people kind of off the street, if you like, gives them an instrument and helps them to become incredible players, and puts the orchestra together, and the orchestra is very, very exciting. It's called the
Simon Bolivar
Orchestra. It's just really, really exciting. Anything that they play, you just feel as if they're all just having the most brilliant time. Quite wonderful. So I've chosen the Nutcracker just, again, because what do you choose, really?
Quite it demonstrates their enjoyment of what they're playing, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. He keeps them kind of in check, but he gives them this freedom. There's an openness. There's life. You feel their enjoyment with the music as well. You don't feel as if they're being constrained and they've got to play what's on the page and that's it. This is how they feel in themselves, how they feel, the joy that music is giving to them. He allows them to express it and bring it out and allows the audience to see what that is as well.
Yes, you could hear the joie de vivre.
Yes.
That was the Russian dance from Act 2, Scene 3 of The Nutcracker by Tchaikovsky, played by the Simon Bolivar Symphony Orchestra of Venezuela, conducted by Gustavo Dudamel. And details of all Joan Armatrading's choices are to be found on the Private Passions page of the Radio 3 website. Actually, Joan, you've been very specific about the particular recordings you wanted for the programme. And I think that's not surprising, being a musician, you have a keen ear. So I wonder, do you listen a lot to music at home, or do you actually find you have to cut yourself off from it a bit in order to make your own?
I don't listen to a lot of music. The music that I listen to the most actually is classical music. You know, all the forms, classical, baroque, romantic. I like all the forms of what we term classical music. When I listen to classical music, I think, God, how on earth did you write that then? Because that's a bit too clever.
Well, you might well say that about the next piece, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, when you listen to this, The Protecting Veil by John Tavener, it's like one long chord. You think, well, what are you going to do with that? But it just moves, it undulates, it's got drama in it, you cry, it's pathos. I mean, it's got everything in this one long chord that just seems to go on and on and on. You think, well, where's that going to end up? And it's quite incredible because, you know, sometimes, as you hear people say, the simplest things are the hardest things to write.
I think what gives this that very plangent tone that you're talking about, it's not just the constancy of the sound, but that he has the solo cello incredibly high up in the register.
It's exquisite, and the tone of it is very rich. And I remember when this came out, it was immediately popular and immediately, what rubbish is that? Because I remember saying to some friends of mine how much I loved it. I just thought it was the most wonderful thing I'd heard. And them saying to me, are you mad? It just sounds so awful. It's just this high, nothing going on, you know, going nowhere. But I think they just missed all the nuances. It's just beautiful. That's wonderful. I mean, you just hear this constant chord, like never-changing chord. All the other stuff's going on, but it's just this one constant. I love stuff like that, yeah.
That was the first section of John Tavener, who sadly died recently. John Tavener's The Protecting Veil. And we heard Stephen Isserlis, the wonderful original soloist, on the piece, playing with the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Gennady Rozhdestvensky. It has a sense of awe and wonder, but also, I think, it has a kind of nurturing quality to it.
Yes, you're right. Why don't you do this interview? No, you're absolutely right, though. It is very feminine. It is very, it says the protecting. It is very protective. It's not the masculine protective. It's that nurturing protective thing that comes across. It's that kind of comfort, warmth. Quite incredible that it's a chap who's doing this music, and he can have that feel.
We're going to move Joan Armatrading to something completely different now, but wonderful in a different way.
Yes.
What is it?
It's the thing we're moving to is Wynton Marsalis, and he, kind of like Nigel, actually, for me, is the most incredible player. Again, he plays classical pieces, he plays jazz pieces, he plays standards. He says when he writes, these pieces just come to him. And it's kind of the way I write. These pieces just come to me. And I find that I write quite a lot of it in my head before I even do anything on a piano or a guitar. And he seems to work pretty much the same way, which I was quite fascinated by. This, In This House on This Morning, was an album I bought when it first came out. And it's really all about kind of depicting the church and the black church and how people would go to the sermons. And when you listen to the music, you can hear the conversation of the minister and then the congregation responding. You know, you get the definite sense of kind of going back to slave times. Do you see how I kind of hesitated when I said that? But going back to slave times. But it was really very important for black guys, still is, but very important then, to have this religious, a kind of spiritual thing, and to be able to connect to the church and be able to have something that felt as if, again, it was protecting you and giving you comfort, because comfort was pretty hard to come by then. So, and I think he really captures it in this piece.
Thank you.
The choral response from part one of Wynton Marsalis's In This House on This Morning, the Wynton Marsalis septet. As you say, Joan Armatrading, he's very like Nigel Kennedy in that one minute you might hear him playing music like that, which has a real swing to it, or the next minute playing a Haydn trumpet concerto, but both with technical assurance.
It's that feel again as well.
I mean, you actually play quite a few instruments, so you have quite a bit of versatility yourself, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I play... I don't know you'd want me in your band for all of the things that I play, but but I play lots of different things because when I write, I like to arrange the songs, and if I'm hearing a bass part, I want to know what it sounds like, so I'll play the bass. Although on my last few albums, I've actually played the bass. And I play like mandolin or the mouth organ, keyboards, kind of almost whatever I need to play for that arrangement, I'll have a go at it. But my main instruments are the piano and the
guitar.
And
then you get in people to do drums and things.
Yeah, I'm not good enough to play the drums on my records myself. but I keep saying to myself, one day I will do that.
The Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto, familiar to many through that film with Trevor Howard and Celia Johnson. But actually, we don't have it on the programme that often now. I think people think it's so familiar.
I didn't choose it because of Brief Encounter. I just love this piece. It's a very kind of conversational piece. It starts with something that says, I'm going to tell you something. This is how it goes. And I love it, and it's romantic. It's very, very melodic. It's beautifully melodic. And it's from that romantic period when it was all about strong melodies, and this is what you're getting with this. And I love strong melodies. I'm a writer. I want to hear a tune.
Thank you.
That's just beautiful. That's the kind of thing that I'm talking about when I say, how do you write that? Because that he made that up. How do you make that up?
What I like about it is the huge arch of the melodies. Mm. They're almost inexorable. And so one phrase leads into the next one.
And that's really what I was saying about this conversation. It's telling a story, and one part is leading into the next part. And it's got a proper kind of narrative, you know. It's really telling the story, and we want to know what happens in the end. This is in somebody's head. this is somebody thinking, okay, how can I do this next bit? And it's kind of easy. I find it quite easy in one sense, but once you kind of know what you want to say, in another sense, it's quite difficult to not just repeat yourself over and over again, not say the same sentence over and over again. It takes somebody quite special to write this kind of a piece.
The opening of the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto in C minor. And we heard Vladimir Ashkenazy and the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Andre Previn. They did a very good set of all of the concertos, actually. Joan Armatrading, you've honorary degrees from seven universities, but I think probably it's your BA in history, awarded in 2000, which perhaps means the most to you.
Yes. What I worked very hard for that.
Yeah. What motivated you to do that?
I decided one year, having come home from gigs late at night, 4 o'clock in the morning, whatever time it is, and the only thing on the television is the Open University. And they always said, send off for the pack. And one day I thought, I'm going to send off for the pack. So I sent off for the pack, and my degree is in history, and I kind of knew I wanted to do history. But what they had at the time was a foundation course, and you had five subjects, and one of the subjects was music. I didn't want to do music, but you had to, you know, do these five things. I didn't think I wanted to know some of the really serious technical parts of music. And I've heard other musicians, I've heard Paul McCartney say the same thing, but I just always wanted a degree. It's as simple as that, really. I wasn't able to stay on at school, so I wasn't able to go to university and get the degree, but I'd always wanted to have one. And the Open University is absolutely brilliant for allowing that to happen. I did it when I was on tour. I would be in Australia trying to get my essay back to England, or in America, wherever. And I think, well, if I can do it, you can do it, really. It's a brilliant thing, really is.
And this next music came out of it, I think. Purcell's Dido and Aeneas.
Actually, we did quite a few different things, but this one was one that I got quite involved with. I just thought the music was absolutely beautiful. I loved all the singing. Just wonderful. And it's hard to pick, again, what to play, but this is Our Belinda that I'm going to play.
Oh,
Veronique Jean's singing Dido's aria, Ah, Belinda, I am pressed with torment, from Act One of Purcell's Dido and Aeneas. And she was accompanied there by Les Arts Florissants, conducted by William Christie. I understand you're going on tour in September, I think, and you've said it just might be your last.
Yeah, I am going on tour. It starts in September. First of all, smaller venues, September, and then hopefully some bigger venues later on in 2015. And the tour will go from September until the end of 2015. It's my last major tour. It's not my last tour ever. I do want to be able to go and do a concert now and again, but I just don't want to be on the road for 18 months at a time and as a little old lady.
Yeah. You've talked so much about music you love and from every genre, really. Is there any music you don't really relate to?
No, I like everything. There's good stuff in everything. I like, you know, sometimes I hear people talk about hip-hop and rap and they say it was rubbish music. No, it's not. If you listen to some of the stuff of Eminem, say, and some of his lyrics, or if you listen to some of the stuff that Snoop Dogg does, beautiful music. Very clever rhymes and very clever rhythms.
Well, we're going to finish with one of your very favourite pieces, and indeed by a composer I regard somewhat as God.
Oh, well, then there's two of us there. Yeah, this is Bach. You know, when we talk about people making things up, this guy, everything about what he writes, you think, how is that humanly possible? If you want to say what's the greatest piece of music ever written and you wanted to say the Brandenburg Concertos, you'd be fine.
Well, with the Allegro from the Brandenburg Concerto No. 3 in G, I will say, Joan Armatrading, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The first movement of Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 3, performed by the English Baroque soloists, conducted by John Elliott Gardiner. And details of all Joan Armatrading's music choices are on the Private Passions page of the Radio 3 website, where you can also download a free podcast of the programme. Private Passions was presented by Michael Barclay and produced by Jane Greenwood. It's a Loftus production for BBC Radio 3. And next week, Michael's guest is the MP Kwasi Kwarteng. That's at the same time next Sunday, midday.
We've been doing this for almost 20 years now, so they cannot dismiss us.
Lucy Ash profiles five people who are making waves across Europe.
You've been described as a terrorist, a Nazi, and an angel. Which are you?
Con ninguno.
I'm not any of these. I'm not particularly intelligent. I'm not powerful. I'm just a normal person. And that's what worries them most.
Europe's Troublemakers. This Monday to Friday at 1:45 on BBC Radio 4.
This is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting between 90 and 93 on FM. We're on digital radio and we're live online in high-definition sound. And in a couple of minutes' time, the Vienna Piano Trio playing Beethoven. First, though, the news read by David Cornett.
The president of the European Commission has said it would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, for an independent Scotland to join the EU. José Manuel Barroso said Scotland would have to apply for membership and get the approval of all the current member states. The SNP has dismissed his comments as pretty preposterous, but the former Chancellor Alistair Darling, who chairs the Better Together campaign against Scottish independence, said the remarks showed Scotland's First Minister, Alex Salmond, to be a man without a plan. Downing Street has said the result of the Scottish independence referendum will be fully respected. Officials were responding to a letter from Alex Salmond to David Cameron in which he called on the Prime Minister to reject a suggestion from an unnamed senior coalition source that a yes vote might not guarantee independence if separation talks did not go smoothly. The Defence Secretary says the Army will do a very rapid inspection of all flood defences to assess the damage done by the recent storms. Philip Hammond said the troops would try to complete in 5 weeks what would normally be a 2-year programme. Rescue workers in South Africa are trying to reach a group of miners who are reported to be trapped underground. Part of an abandoned gold mine is understood to have collapsed. The miners are said to have been working there illegally. The deposed Egyptian president, Mohamed Morsi, is facing a fresh trial on charges of espionage and conspiring to commit acts of terror. Mr. Morsi appeared in court in Cairo this morning. The former president was overthrown by the army in July. His supporters say the charges are politically motivated. The Ukrainian opposition say that protesters in the capital, Kiev, have pulled out of the city hall building, which they've occupied since December. The move is part of an amnesty deal with the government. And the weather, it'll remain fine, dry and sunny this afternoon for much of the UK, although showers across Scotland and the northwest may be wintry for a time. Top temperatures ranging from 6 to 10 Celsius. BBC News and weather at 1:03.
And it was read by David Cornett. So, to the Radio 3 lunchtime concert, this one from March last year at LSO St Luke's in the heart of London. One of a series of concerts to mark LSO St Luke's 10th birthday celebrations in 2013. The players are the Vienna Piano Trio, no strangers to Radio 3 over their own history of 20 or so years. And when the trio gave their first concert at LSO St Luke's, like most musicians playing there for the first time, they fell in love with the beautiful hall of the renovated Hawksmoor Church and its superb acoustics. And it was Viennese repertoire they brought with them for this concert, an all-Beethoven programme with the mighty Archduke Trio as the main work. And first of all here, a set of variations published in 1804 when Beethoven had really begun to make his mark in Vienna, both as a composer and as a pianist. It's quite likely the variations started life as a movement Beethoven discarded from his early set of trios, Opus 1. He was later to say about the Opus 1 set, "When I reread the manuscripts, I wonder at my folly in collecting into a single work materials enough for 20. And following the fashion of the time to take popular songs as the inspiration for sets of variations, the theme for this set comes from a musical play called The Little Red Cap by Karl von Dittersdorf, and it's followed by 14 variations in all. So here they are, the Vienna Piano Trio in Beethoven's Variations in E-flat, Opus 44.
Thank you.